Hi, this is the Tangled Podcast, a show where I talk to people who are improving the way humans use resources and interact with the world. I'm interested in how we can mimic the way ecosystems transform and transmit energy in a constant cycle that produces no waste. Today, I'm talking to Dylan Gower. Dylan is an architect by trade, but in this interview, we discuss a community energy project that he leads. The organization is based in Cowra, a town in central New South Wales, a few hours drive west from Sydney. The group is called CLEAN, which stands for Cowra Local Energy Action Network. The long-term aim for CLEAN Cowra is to develop a decentralized energy network for their local community by digesting organic matter from agricultural, industrial, and residential sources to produce biogas. This gas can then be used to generate electricity and thermal energy, and then the byproducts from the biogas production can be used by farms, factories, and other businesses. The project interests me because Dylan and his collaborators are trying to look holistically at the way humans use resources. It's the kind of common sense approach that we need if we want to design systems that can work for the long term without relying on fossil fuels. There are good reasons why we have used fossil fuels for the past couple of hundred years. They've been cheap, they're extremely energy dense, and you can store and transport them easily. But if we want to have any chance of weaning ourselves off these sources of energies, we need to design elegant systems that effectively make use of locally available stuff. This is what Dylan is trying to do with CLEAN Cowra. In theory, once the system is set up in Cowra, it could provide the community not only with renewable energy, but also a way to filter water, increase soil fertility, reduce reliance on government subsidies, inoculate them from geopolitical shifts with regard to trade and energy policies, regenerate local ecosystems, provide ongoing employment and entrepreneurial opportunities, and show other communities how they can implement similar systems. Dylan didn't pay me to say this, but I honestly struggle to think of any downsides to pursuing the project. You can find out more about Dylan's work at clean.org.au, and show notes with links to everything we talk about are at tangledpodcast.com. If you find the show interesting, please subscribe to Tangled in whichever app you use, and share it around with anyone you know who might also like it. One last thing, I write a monthly email newsletter with recommendations for a few good books, articles, and podcast episodes. I'll keep you updated with new episodes from this podcast as well. If you want to sign up, you can do so at tangledpodcast.com. Okay, here's my conversation with Dylan Gower. Maybe we can start by just getting you to describe what the CLEAN Cowra project is and what you're eventually hoping to achieve with it.
That's a big ask.
Start wherever you want. Go as deep as you want to start. But yeah, you know, just to give people a general idea if they've never heard of your work, you know what, because it is so big, or it does include so much that I'm curious to just see how you describe how you distill it.
So obviously, CLEAN Cowra is a community organisation. So they've been developing the Cowra Bioenergy Project for the last, goes on 6 years now. So it's gone through a number of iterations, but effectively looking at how regional communities can utilize biomass to convert it to energy and then distribute it back to community for their own use. So in effect, that's a nutshell what the Cowra Bioenergy Project is. And it's driven by a community organization, CLEAN Cowra.
Where did the original idea for it come from?
I think it comes from a number of spaces. So from personally myself, working as an architect, very interested in ecological sustainable development, also specifically renewable energy and how it can be utilized in the built environment. Moving to Cowra back in 2007, not having lived in previously in a regional area and being made aware of a number of the opportunities that were around in terms of resource availability. We ran a conference through our Natural Resources Advisory Committee Council. We promoted bioenergy quite heavily through that process. We were looking broadly at renewables, but we wanted to have a regional focus, so looking at bioenergy and how that may be applicable to regional communities. And it was at that time there were a number of proponents around who, you know, were advocating that bioenergy was a regional and rural solution. And certainly from a community perspective, it made a lot of sense for myself. And so Clean Cara, which had already been involved in a number of solar projects locally, embraced this idea of bioenergy as a as an alternative solution for Cara's energy needs. And it was through that that we started advocating from Clean Cara's perspective of how this would look from a community energy perspective and its relevance to a local regional town.
So what can you give me an idea of literally what are some of the waste streams or resource streams, I suppose, that you're planning to incorporate into the system?
So as part of the initiation, we got engagement through Office Environment and Heritage, Sustainability Advantage. And we undertook a resource audit, which is effectively mapping all the known available resources in the region. And so that was quite diverse, but particularly looking at agricultural residues, industrial processing waste, horticultural waste, intensive animal husbandry, so piggeries, dairies, and chicken runs, and also then council's own municipal waste streams as well. So all of them were mapped and identified on a on an initial audit level. So we understand broadly what is available to a region like Cara. From then, we honed it down to those sort of readily available and within close proximity to a prospective plant. So looking at distance and location, not wanting to truck biomass across town or large distances. So looking at what was readily available. And so that's sort of where it's come about that we know the resources available. At the initial instance, we look at the immediate and readily available streams.
It's really interesting, I think, because it sort of forces you to deal with multiple disciplines at once. You know, like there's not one expert or one field of study that you can go and do and then become an expert in what this project is. Have you found that to be challenging because there's not sort of one person you can go to and ask all the questions?
I think it's been challenging on a number of levels. A, in terms of getting traction with the projects. So you can explain what the project's about and people are genuinely interested in and fascinated by it, but actually to get engagement on a number of levels, particularly with government departments, you know, that they have their very siloed approaches to things. So if you start speaking to the energy department, they understand a small component of it, but they don't understand, you know, necessarily the waste stream. So you then have to speak to the environmental department and the EPA, and their remit is quite small. And then you start to have to speak to industry and agriculture as well. So there's a broad gamut of people that you've got to bring on board, local government, the council itself, and obviously businesses and industry as well. And so it is a very iterative process in terms of breaking it down, explaining it, and getting an engagement and then taking it to the next level. So it's a very cyclic approach. So to use a design language metaphor, it's a, you know, coming up with a concept, redeveloping it, redefining it, and then over time revisiting it in every iteration. And so it's really applying that design thinking process to a project of this nature, I guess, is what I bring to the table.
You were saying earlier how you've had to start peeling away layers of the complexity of the overall project and just hone in and focus, at least for the time being, on a specific aspect. And then I suppose the plan is to hop around from there and hone in, and then you can zoom back out again. But can you explain exactly what the last few months have had in store for you?
So initially we presented this very broad overarching project, you know, 12 megawatt plan to produce 60% of Cara's energy needs, a large bioenergy facility, potentially in two parts of the town. So it was a grand vision in terms of the opportunity that exists for Cara and still exists. It's just in terms of actually getting over the line. As you said, we had to break it down into smaller components. And so one of the items within what we're trying to develop is how you distribute energy locally. So once you've actually generated the energy and produced the energy, how it gets distributed. So looking at a decentralized energy model, from a facility to a number of parties. And specifically, we were looking at an embedded network, or more commonly known as a microgrid. So a small network within one part of the town, placing a number of parties behind that one mother meter, and then distributing any energy produced directly to those parties. So the bioenergy facility will follow suit. So the building of the microgrid is sort of the key point, and that's sort of something that we've invested the last 9 months in terms of investigating, looking at the approvals process through the energy distributors, doing a costing in terms of the actual project, and then doing some business analysis on the demand requirements for those potential customers meeting what we actually generate. And so trying to get a match between the two. So it's a small initial step, but quite a crucial one. It allows us to distribute any electrical energy that we produce from this network. But there are other considerations now that, you know, how we distribute the thermal component and how we deal with the CO2 as an actual commodity. Mm-hmm. So it's a number of moving parts, but we think it's a real crucial step in terms of getting the first part of the project up and running.
Can you expand more on your thoughts on distributing the thermal energy and the CO2? Do you have ideas for how you can do that?
So certainly some of the consultants that we've been working with are specialists in thermal energy distribution. They've done a number of projects where they've done district heating networks, so utilizing pipes underground that pipe either in this instance hot water to a reasonable distance to an off-taker who either uses that for preheating or sterilization or any other requirement they may have thermally for their industrial processing, or alternatively can actually be chilled and using absorption chillers for chilling for refrigeration and the like. So that's a broader part of the project. Initially, our focus is the electrical part. There's also a potential for the thermal value to be used in intensive horticulture, and that's also a focus for CO2. Most greenhouses within the Australian context use LPG because of their rural setting to actually create CO2 or burnt to make CO2 to improve productivity, but also for heating of the glass houses. So that's a common practice. We think we can address it quite neatly by actually placing or co-locating the plant or the facility with a greenhouse closely located by. The CO2 then doesn't become an emissions from the project, but it actually becomes a commodity. So another small capture for the project. So electrical, the thermal, and the CO2 is a byproduct of the harnessing the biomass.
There's also obviously the spent substrate that I believe you'll be planning to turn into fertilizer products. Yeah. Yeah, can you talk a little bit about that process?
So as part of the byproduct of the digestion, so once you've actually captured the methane, the pat, as we call it, so taking the analogy of a cow's stomach, that you create the gas and you create the water, you then have the pat as a byproduct, highly rich in nutrients and microbes. In its concentrated form, has a similar equivalent to the fertilizer that's currently applied to land. Through upgrading and specification and processing, you can get it to effectively a chemical-based fertilizer equivalent. And it has a comparable value to fertilizers in the regional community. A large number of local farmers have indicated they're highly interested in that as a byproduct. And we're working very closely with a local mineral processor. He's very interested in it as a product of his market as well. And in terms of it's also looking at actually reducing the amount of import that would be required into the district, producing local fertilizer to meet local need is sort of another one of those economic benefits for a local community.
Have you been informed or inspired by any other particular people or projects around the world, or are you sort of just like flying into the void and figuring it out?
No, obviously the whole project has been influenced, looking at other people introducing ideas to us. Specifically, I just mentioned the microgrid. You know, that's something that's been brought to us as part of the distribution model. Certainly, initially biomass as part of an industrial process has been really a key sort of focus. That whole industrial ecology process of utilizing waste, creating energy is another sort of stimulus for the ideas around the project. I guess what we're trying to do is amalgamate this broader collective and look at the whole system, look at the community sitting above it as well. So looking at it from a real localized focus as opposed to just a purely commercial orientation. So it requires a lot of negotiation, a lot of co-discovery, co-collaboration in a broader sense with a number of parties to really make it happen. You know, bringing council on board, bringing industry and business on board is really part of the key. But I guess hopefully what we can demonstrate is that, you know, we can build a plant at scale. It produces significant energy for their utilization, and it at the same time employs people locally, reduces the amount of resources we have to bring into the community, and creates a local, you know, economic stimulus to a small regional town.
Yeah, that's why I like it. I feel like there's just so many synergistic feed on effects with each other that everything sort of it's like a snowball that just the benefits accrue, which accrues more benefits, which accrues more benefits. So, yeah.
And even down to the emissions component as well, that if we can encapsulate that as a value in terms of emissions abatement, in terms of methane sequestering, and also just generally in terms of energy generation offsets as well, that if we can encapsulate that into a community value, that has an added benefit in terms of setting up some form of perpetual trust for community utilization. And that's, I guess, the ideal and not a common practice that's occurring elsewhere. There are community energy projects that encapsulate that. There are bioenergy projects that encapsulate the biomass value. And I guess there are distributed energy models that do that. But it's trying to take all three of those components and put it together in a broader model is probably the uniqueness of it.
No, definitely. That's unique. Can you talk more about what you mean by the perpetual fund?
The idea is that obviously the community over the time of the development of the project have invested into making it happen. We've received government funding to do a number of the feasibilities and studies behind it. And I guess it's an acknowledgement of that contribution to community that we encapsulate some of that value, that the revenue streams generated by the energy and the off-sale of the other commodities will be, you know, accumulated or cumulative. And that value we want to return back to the community in some form of trust or fund that the community can tap into and say, well, you know, we have an idea for an environmental project or an educational project or a cultural project that we locally can actually support those sort of type of projects, which normally are required to be supported by state or federal government or local government. And so it's just changing the model in terms of that dynamic. And the revenue streams coming from those are significant. So there's a real opportunity if we do encapsulate just a component of each into this fund that, you know, it could be quite significant for a small town like Carra.
Australians really haven't had pressure to conserve energy or space or resources because we just happen to have been so lucky having so much of everything and cheaply available, at least, you know, in the not too distant past. But I think probably as different, as you were saying actually earlier before we started recording, that now there is pressure from different angles simultaneously, which perhaps might make people who were previously not really on board with your thinking come on board. Can you talk a little bit about what you mean by that?
Obviously, our initial objective is from an environmental or, a position of sustainability that we've come to the project. And I guess bringing those more commercially orientated parties on board who are looking more at the economic focus. And I guess what's happened now is the two are sort of coming together and because of the pressure, as you said, from an energy perspective, from a thermal energy perspective in terms of gas pricing, and also from a waste management requirement, that they're becoming more and more onerous, so that collective impact on those businesses is more significant. And so in a way, it's kind of accelerated our process more recently that they suddenly, you know, making the impact of those requirements or meeting those requirements has become more onerous for those commercial operations by encapsulating it in a system that provides a waste management and energy at the same time has a real, real potential commercial benefit for them. And so, ironically, the environmental solution provides an economic benefit to them. So I guess that's kind of a great story in terms of saying, well, yes, we are doing it for environmental reasons, but actually it has a commercial benefit.
Yeah, I feel like most of the time that I can think of really effective environmental schemes have had to have that. You know, you can never, I don't think, really effectively just rely on people's guilt or, you know, like compassion or, you know, that element of it. It's like Elon Musk trying to shift cars to be electrified, but not just doing it by trying to make people feel bad about it, but just making a really good car that people want to buy.
Yeah, and look, I mean, that's to some degree, not to put us in the same boat, but just that we've pushed it on a community benefit basis, that, you know, there's an economic benefit by creating a local community through creating local jobs and local commodities in the market, by addressing issues of energy and security, addressing local employment through the jobs in the markets, and also dealing with a waste management issue. So not sort of emphasizing the environmental outcomes, but actually emphasizing the local benefits. And I think that's sort of been our position all the way along, that we can still meet these requirements, but at the same time get this big win for everyone. Yeah.
Have you had much pushback from either anyone in the community or organizations or any relevant stakeholders? I mean, obviously, you know, moving, you know, as fast as physically possible, but I'm just curious, what are the main obstacles, either regulatory or just people's perceptions? Or
I think it's combined, and whenever you are in a regional town, there are, you know, fairly conservative attitudes towards both climate and the environment. But I think two comments, probably initially trying to get council on board, there was little resistance about, you know, how this would look and how it would work. And I think when it was identified, particularly from an agricultural perspective, that there were significant benefits in terms of dealing with waste, providing energy at a more determined value, and also this potential of creating a fertilizer that was locally produced, appealed to the agricultural community sector. And it was demonstrated in one of the councillors who's from an agricultural background saying this solution really makes sense for our community. And so, you know, I think that really galvanised the sense from council, well, actually this makes sense, so we should be doing it, and not necessarily driven purely from an environmental focus. From a large industrial process perspective, I guess their concerns are primarily around energy. And so, you know, we've had a couple of pushbacks around, you know, we have cheap coal, we should be using cheap coal. And we're going, well, we've got a local resource that you don't even have to ship in anyway, and a large part of the waste stream is actually yours. We can do it here. And yes, the coal has a value, but we actually have a local resource that we can actually utilize here. And so it's just changing that focus and opinion, and not pushing hard on the environmental outcomes and benefits, but just to sell a message that this actually just makes sense in terms of local communities.
I'm curious how literally the process of digesting the organic matter, because there are obviously multiple ways you could do that. What at the moment, what is your thinking on the different processes?
So depending on the makeup of the substrate or the feedstocks, obviously it has a bandwidth from wet right through to very dry or cellulosic. And so at the moment we've looking from a technology perspective from anaerobic digestion, which requires a more focus towards the wet and semi-wet. But there are new technologies in terms of pre-processing that actually can take cellulose and actually produce anaerobic digestion through it, just through a breaking down of the cellulosic to making it suitable substrate to actually for digestion. We have also looked at pyrolysis, but pyrolysis in an Australian context, or particularly in the New South Wales context, is somewhat waiting for the policy to shift a bit. There's emphasis, or there's concern, and rightly so, around the utilisation of burning substrates that may have contamination in it. Our argument is that all our substrates are purely organic and have no contamination or metals or plastics in them, and therefore are quite suitable for a trial to actually encourage the utilization of pyrolysis. But that'll take a longer conversations. We and you know dialogue with a number of parties who in that space and trying to get projects up and running. And it will continue to be of interest to us. The byproduct of pyrolysis is biochar, which is highly valuable to improve soil structures in combination with bio-based fertilizers is sort of an ideal product for local soils. Mm-hmm. And so that's an interest to us. But at the moment, ironically, the cellulosic material is more readily available than the more suitable ones to digestion. But because of the politics at play, we've had to focus more on the anaerobic digestion, mm-hmm. which has a benefit as well, and we can get facilities to scale as well, but just in terms of the local or readily available resource, technology more suited to the cellulosic component would be more beneficial.
Have you had interest from other community groups or people either in Australia or even around the world that are interested in somehow following your footsteps?
Yeah, no, certainly there's been interest in a number of parties and number of parties we've been in discussion with from Victoria, WA, Queensland, Northern New South Wales, even out of New Zealand as well. So I guess the interest is there, and that's very, admirable to have. But I guess we've said we've got to get a plant up and running and demonstrate our project as an outcome before we sort of start committing to looking elsewhere. Mm. But certainly as part of the game plan, you know, we've always said that this model is regional and it's scalable and it's adaptable to other regional environments. And so, you know, once we get the initial plant up and happening and demonstrate its capacity and benefit, that we can actually then take that model elsewhere. And that, you know, we've identified a process and we've identified a methodology that we can work through, and it's about applying that same logic and process and engagement to other communities that we think we have something to offer.
In the process, the long process of working through this, is there anything that you've changed your mind about?
Any consideration would be more about simplifying the message. So probably presenting something that's quite a complex solution and outcome is how you can most simplify the message of what you're trying to do, because I think it almost becomes implausible or unfathomable when you get too deep into all the moving parts about it, and people can get lost in it. And so just trying to really simplify the message of what we're trying to achieve is probably been the biggest learning exercise, I guess, and also knowing your audience. So whether you're pitching to just locals or local community groups, or pitching to council, or pitching to state government, or other funding bodies, you've got to have a particular message, and that's probably been the most significant learning. Frustration of the slow adoption of bioenergy technology in Australia. It's probably another, question mark, why it's taking so long. You know, this technology is, you know, significantly used throughout Europe, Scandinavia, UK, Canada, parts of the US, Southeast Asia. I think I described before, Germany alone has over 10,000 plants up and running through an AD process alone. It's proven technology. It's just a matter of adopting it for the Australian context. Mm. We probably in Australia only have, you know, a handful of plants that are, you know, up and running. Most of them are single substrate, so single digestion process associated to a single plant, where ours is looking at this co-digestion process, which adds complexity, but it adds significant benefit of producing a plant at scale, but also the ability to take a number of substrates and produce an increase of gas in that production. So they're all things that we've learned. Working with a number of stakeholders, you know, is a long and complex process. Keeping engagement, not over-promising stuff, has probably been the the key objective. Slowly it'll happen. I guess now we're really in a position we have to act fast. The pressure is there to get something demonstrable on ground that people can see and come and see it actually happened. It was really interesting about 2 years ago, we did a local trial. We bought a small digester to town and we processed a number of substrates over a week long, which was beneficial in terms of getting engagement, seeing actually, you know, this technology is available and can be utilized. And so I think having something on ground is really key to people understanding its benefits. People go to some of the plants. There's a key plant in WA, at Jandakot, which is sort of a good case study of it is achievable. It is, plausible. Earth Power in Sydney is another one that was originally built quite some time ago, but has been repurposed to take new feedstocks. Yeah. Mm. So there are good examples out there. It's just a matter of trying to do it at scale where you've got a number of parties involved is probably the more complex arrangement. Yeah.
And ideally, the design of the microgrid, would it be such that it could be extended to include other sources of power generation?
Absolutely.
Like, for example, solar.
Yeah. Certainly, as part of the initial part of the microgrid, we're putting a small solar component in there and storage. So we will have the ability to demonstrate that generation behind the grid actually can be utilized and also respond to peak demand requirements as well. So the battery will act as a responsive environment. And we hope to do the same, the ability of gas that you can store it and utilize it when you need it. So the ability to focus on those peak shoulders, peak demand requirements, so that the solar will run during the day predominantly. We can then respond to morning or afternoon troughs, even the ability to run through the night using gas while the solar is not active. And so we're really looking at that as a key part of the model. So yes, bioenergy is the key focus because of the waste requirements and the waste management issues. But we will look at other technologies as well. Pyrolysis, as we mentioned, which has a great benefit for thermal value as well. And certainly, unfortunately, in the Carrara Basin, we're a bit of a wind shadow in the Carrara Basin. But certainly the likes of hydroelectric is certainly a focus. Wyangla Dam near Carrara has a very small micro hydro system there that could be potentially expanded upon. And I think also looking at how we take the microgrid concept and apply it to other parts of Carrara. So certainly new areas of development, new industrial states or developing industrial states or other placing other networks near large producers as well or consumers of energy. And so we're trying to map that out from a Carrara perspective. We're certainly in discussion with council about how that may be applicable to some of their new developments. But I guess it's one step at a time. First project, we've acquired land for the project in a great location. It'll allow us to distribute very readily to immediate proximity to off-takers and is a great location for bringing in the waste streams as well. So, getting that first component up and running is probably vital to the next step of the project.
That was a fascinating overview. I really appreciate it. I think, that would give people a great general idea of what you're doing. Do you have any other final thoughts of anything that hasn't come up that you wanted to mention?
Some of the people who have mentored the group and myself through the process of development and, it always just coming back to simply defining what it actually is that we're trying to do. That it is quite commonly people say it's a solution that just makes sense. Why aren't we doing this? And due to its complexity and multiple moving parts is that it's just something that takes time. And until we have that one demonstrable model, people can't actually grasp what it is. And we've tried through, presentations and 3D and people are just tactile by human, by nature. And so they need to see it before they will appreciate it. But we're hoping by breaking it down into these smaller parts that we can get each part moving to demonstrate the broader opportunity. And hopefully we should be breaking ground within the next 12 months in Cowra and get that first part of the project up and running, which would be a big step. Yeah.
Good luck, and thank you so much for taking a couple of minutes to chat.
Pleasure.
Thanks for listening to my conversation with Dylan Gower. Links to everything we talked about are at tangledpodcast.com. That's also where you can sign up to my monthly email newsletter, in which I send out a list of interesting reading and listening material, as well as keeping you updated on new episodes of Tangled. If you enjoyed listening, you could give the show a 5-star rating and review in the iTunes app, which would really help me out. Okay, speak to you next time.